This is awesome. I did not envision I'd be doing a podcast in our alpha vehicles. What is actually pretty hard is, like, you know, building an entire, like, new, like, you know, vehicle chassis and body and interior. And that's the type of stuff where, you know, an automotive company is going to have hundreds or maybe thousands of people to, like, to do something like that. And we're going to do it with, you know, around 75 people. The reason investors invest in us is because they think there is a good financial return in addition to, like, we're doing something that's good for the world. And I think it's just important to know that. And it actually, like, it's pretty empowering. Like, this is why Tesla was successful. And I think this is why we can be successful, is, like, the financial return is the engine.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor. This episode is with Toby Kraus, co-founder and CEO of Lightship, a company that's building a whole new concept in towable campers, powered by $60 million in venture funding. And when I say a whole new concept, take a minute, think about high-end, pretty large campers that you see, maybe like those big silver Airstream trailers. Now, replace what's mostly those silver walls, or on other brands, maybe those big brown fiberglass walls. Think about replacing those with glass so the whole thing is open. And the rig is powered by renewable electricity. Lightships are amazing to look at, and investors see huge potentials. We're recording here not only at Lightship, but in Lightship, in the prototype. And Toby and I are sitting in one right now. Toby, it's so cool to have you with me on ProCo 360.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I did not envision I'd be doing a podcast in our alpha vehicle, so this is pretty fun.
Yeah, here you go. And I got a tour earlier from Nathan. He showed me around, showed me how things work. I didn't break anything yet, so that's all cool.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, one of our values is to build a vehicle that lasts, so it at least passed your first test.
That's excellent. Now, I gave a quick overview of Lightship, and I want you to, maybe you can probably give us a better one.
Yeah, so the mission here at Lightship is we're working on bringing recreational vehicles into the electric age. And you know, for folks that aren't familiar with the industry, it's something that we're pretty excited about, because if you look at the industry, it's just a part of Americana. One in 10 American families owns one of these.
Really?
And yeah, I know, it's shocking, right?
Yes.
When I first heard that too, I was kind of blown away. It's in our country, it's actually really kind of like second only to cars in terms of unit volume. In the U.S., like, you know, 10 to 14 million cars are sold in a given year, and it's about 500,000 RVs. So,
wow.
So it's pretty massive. That's a big part of it. So bringing, you know, this really important piece of you know, American travel into the electric age, and simultaneously, we really want to work on making the recreational vehicle, you know, more inclusive and bring more people into the industry as well. And yeah, we're just getting started and excited to tell you more about it.
Yeah, and I painted a picture of it, you know, saying replace these, what generally are solid walls of traditional RVs with, I'm sitting here and I can see virtually everything around me. It's like sitting kind of in a fishbowl, really.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the reactions that we get. Like you walk in and, you know, first of all, to paint a picture, the thing is, you know, it's about 10 feet tall when it's in its camping mode. And then when you're inside of it, you get like about 7.5 feet of headroom, which is pretty atypical if you spent, you know, some time in RVs. And then, yeah, we make it a, you know, big open space, glass everywhere. You know, of course, there are definitely some challenges to solve there in terms of making privacy and window coverings and things like that, which we have some cool solutions for. But yeah, we're really, you know, focused on connecting you to nature. That's one of the sort of like big concepts here. We're not trying to sort of like shelter you from your surroundings. And then when you're, you know, going to sleep at night, of course, we want to give you some privacy options as well.
Yeah. And listeners, just so you know, I mean, it doesn't travel 10 feet high. It actually, right, you have motorized up and down function, so it expands.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So the concept here, we really designed a vehicle, you know, from the ground up to be an electric vehicle. And that starts by being super efficient. So we have two modes. When you're driving, the vehicle is in what we call road mode. It's about 6.5 feet tall. It's really kind of like hidden in the aerodynamic shadow of the tow vehicle. We're pretty proud. It actually is about as aerodynamic as a Model 3. So think about like a small passenger car, and we're building a, you know, a 27 foot camper, which is as aerodynamic, which is pretty cool. And then of course, when you're camping, you park and the entire top of the vehicle, what we call the canopy, raises.
Yeah.
And that's where you get to about 10 feet tall.
And you referenced Tesla, your background's Tesla. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Before we get to that though, just again, so listeners have some context, these will sell between $115,000 and $150,000, right?
Yeah, that's sort of our, you know, our starting prices. We have two models, the L1 Essential and the L1 Long Range. And yeah, so that's where we're starting.
And delivery is going to start this year.
We're starting our production. You took a deep breath
around that. Yeah.
We're starting production.
Ah, got it.
This year. And then we're targeting first deliveries, you know, beginning of next year.
Great. So people will start seeing them out on the road next year.
Yep.
So, I mean, this typically kind of, it's kind of early for me on Proco 360 to get a product that's still, you know, in prototype, and but it's just so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm a rooftop tent camper.
Yep.
But when I get tired of climbing up there, like, this is the way to go.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you having us on a little bit early. We're building a complex automotive product, and yeah, the design cycle for something like that is a bit longer. It is definitely complex hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, like, you know, I grew up in Colorado. I'm a kind of native Coloradan, and love Colorado. And I largely spent my, you know, youth camping and mostly in tents.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't until I had kids. I have a couple kids where I kind of like really understood the unlock where a camper is like, I mean, it's awesome. You just sort of like want to have a little bit more comfort, a little bit more space.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're also kind of like a fort on wheels. So if you have young kids, they're a perfect way to travel.
You can lock them up.
Yeah.
Well, question, you know, one thought I had is, and it is super cool. Just like, you know, Apple is super cool and Tesla is super cool to look at. It just struck me that there was, and I'm sure you've heard this, a stark contrast between the notion of nature and what one of these things looks like out there. How do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you think about, okay, like we're making an all electric RV, like that could be a lot of things, right? Like, and it wasn't obvious that you were going to sort of like take the design approach that we did. And, you know, for us, I'd say a second dimension is like, there's a ton of technology in this vehicle. And, you know, I like, you know, growing up backpacking, I was giving my friends a hard time if they took their cell phone out or their, you know, like that. So there's definitely something to be said for there. So, you know, what I would say is, as we got to understand, you know, our customers, you know, better and better, what we realized is there was a really distinct opportunity here to build a vehicle totally differently. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of love for RVing as a pastime. There's a little bit less love for the products that are out there. There hasn't been a ton of, you know, design and innovation over the last several decades. And so, you know, we definitely took some liberties and an approach of really bringing like modern, you know, beautiful, like kind of sustainable design. And we sort of did that in every way we could, right? And even starting from the layout, right? Like you and I are sitting in a thing that's like a wide open space. There's not even an obvious bedroom in here, right?
Yeah, it's super cool. Now, your background, and I think as I look at Lightship, and I think about your background at Tesla, it's not a big jump. No? So tell me about the jump.
No, I think you're right. The joke here is, I spent a big, you know, chunk of my career working at Tesla on small consumer electric vehicles. And I actually spent another big chunk of time at a company called Proterra, which is...
batteries.
Yeah. Well, yeah, batteries. The company actually started as they were building an all-electric transit vehicle, so like a bus.
Oh.
So a big commercial
vehicle. Yeah,
So the natural extension is like, all right, the next thing to work on is a large consumer vehicle, which is an RV. In a lot of ways, I'd say, you know, that extension probably makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Now you keep calling this RV a vehicle, and I've never thought of RVs as vehicles before. I've thought of them as big hunks of whatever that you tow.
Yep.
And you're calling it a vehicle for a reason, right?
We have some internal debate over what even the category is. I will say sort of in the industry, the umbrella term is recreational vehicle.
Yeah.
And that includes both vehicles that are towed and vehicles that are driven. or what are called a motorhome.
Yeah, so yeah.
They're kind of all vehicles. They're all like, you
this
know.
This is sort of in between though, right? I mean, it's a self, it's got some self-powered aspect
right.
of being towed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then ours is somewhere in the middle,
yeah,
right?
It
is both towed and it's got a propulsion system though. You know, it doesn't have a propulsion system that will drive itself. It's not, you know, an autonomous vehicle or something like that. But yeah, anyway, I'd say like the short end of my head, I consider this a vehicle. In some ways, you can get pretty daunted by the design challenge pretty quickly because you're like, oh my gosh, it's a vehicle and it's a like a house on wheels and it's a bunch of consumer electronics and you know, we're creating a whole experience around it. It's a lot. It's definitely a lot.
Honestly, anybody who tries this is probably nuts. I mean, there's so much. I want to ask you some questions about building that. But first, I mean, you worked on the Model S at Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a lot of visibility into Elon Musk and such. And I've read his bio and I've read other stuff. And he is famous for the notion of like pushing fast.
Yep.
Fast, fast, fast. And
yep.
What I'm sitting in is complicated. And if you push this thing too fast, shit's going to break when it gets out there.
Yep.
So how do you balance? How do you even think about that?
Do you mean sort of in terms of like the overall approach or the product itself or both?
I mean, the product itself, you know, I mean, everybody I know who's got RVs,
mm-hmm.
everybody says stuff's breaking
yep.
all the time. And so if you're going to build a solid product, you can't like, how do you balance the idea to get it out the door? You got investors calling to you like,
yep.
and having something that's not breaking.
Yeah. Well, first of all, going back to your prior comment, I agree with you. You got to be a little bit nuts to try to start up an electric vehicle company, really of any time. And you know, much has been said about Elon, but he's brilliant and nuts. And you know, so for us, what I would describe, you know, as a significant challenge, and I think this is for a challenge is also a really big opportunity. So if you look at like the RV industry, all the stereotypes that you mentioned are in large part earned, right? Like the vehicles that you know your friends or many people tow, like they're notorious for falling apart like pretty quickly. We've actually heard from you know somebody inside the RV industry that like the dirty secret is that a lot of RVs it's almost like planned obsolescence. They're you know designed to be used,
huh.
you know, maybe 50 times or something like that, and then they end up in a landfill. And that's not great, particularly if you're trying to design a product and consider it to be sustainable. And so that's pretty interesting though. Like I don't think like consumers don't love that. And for us, you know, it wouldn't have been obvious in designing an electric vehicle that like we would also be doing, you know, focused on durability and you know designed to last. But that actually is a really important value of ours and arguably one of like the most important things we're doing
yeah,
from a product
yeah.
standpoint. And the reason we're able to do that, and it's not just words, is we're taking an automotive development approach to building this thing. So if you look at conventional RVs, they're designed in large part like mobile homes. Like they're,
right.
you know, they're made out of plywood and sheet metal. They're not going through sort of rigorous automotive design cycles and durability cycles. And that's kind of our background here. We are designing, and probably another reason why I'm, you know, kind of inclined to call this a vehicle is like we are designing and developing it like a vehicle. And in fact, like the vehicles you see here in our facility that we're building, we call them our sort of beta vehicles. Those are prototype vehicles that we are going to be, you know, kicking the crap out of, like running through pretty rigorous testing. And that's not something you necessarily see in a sort of traditional RV development process.
Yeah, because I would think, you know, you got to get hundreds of nights, or what do you call them, nights or days or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, of opportunities to turn stuff on, turn stuff off,
oh, yeah.
you know, break stuff. And, you know, the more you test it, the longer it takes to deliver,
mm-hmm.
right? So I know you're going to be starting to manufacture them this year.
Yep.
I suppose you're still going to be testing as you're manufacturing, and how do you manage that complexity?
It's definitely a challenge, and I think I'd say, you know, probably the most important point to make here is we have really good people who've sort of done this before, and they're really capable of managing, you know, complexity and nuance, and we have, you know, really awesome test team. And so thinking about something like tests, like doing there's different kinds of testing. So like if you think about testing, like the way we break it down is you'll look at first and foremost, you know, functional and safety testing. So like you would never, well, I shouldn't say, you know, the royal you broadly, like we would never deliver a product that doesn't complete our sort of like, you know, both functional and safety test spec, right?
Yeah.
It both is safe and it works.
Yeah.
Now, the second sort of like layer of testing is what you'd call like durability or reliability testing, right? And to your point, like the only way to have absolute confidence in that is to do, you know, thousands and thousands of cycles. So
yeah.
Now the way we think about, you know, developing here and also like going fast, we're not trying to get to extremely high volume very quickly. We're actually trying to like deliver something quickly that is excellent. And we will really moderate how fast we scale based on what we're talking about here.
You know what I'm thinking is almost like, you know, the first, just like anything else, the early adopter, you know, they're going to, like I, from my perspective, I always want to buy something, maybe V2, when the kinks of worn out, you know, kind of worked out. But I think when I look at, if I do that, if I wait till V2 or the L2 model, then I'm going to miss all the opportunity for people to, you know, gawk and be impressed at how cool I am. So there are going to be people who are your early adopters that you sell to. You say, look, you know, if something breaks, we'll fix it.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that kind of person, you can't get a perfectionist buying your very first model, can you? I mean, you hope not.
Well, you know, perfectionist or not, I think to your point, you definitely like, it's important to have folks who are really bought into, you know, the mission and the vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, our earliest customers, like, they're kind of on the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think our commitment that we can make to them is we will absolutely, you know, do right by them and take care of everything. And I think the product's going to be pretty darn good. But yeah, like, I think, you know, I would be delusional. I think anybody who's developing a complex hardware product and is going to tell you, like, in Gen 1, everything is perfect. They clearly haven't done it before.
Yeah, yeah, you try.
Yeah.
I had a guy named Jonathan Ballesteros who invented and now is selling Geyser Systems, which is a little self-propelled, self-heating, kind of a shower replacement for campers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah,
he's designed all kinds of things. He told me he's designed all kinds of things, but until he started designing something that contained water and pressure, he had no idea of how complex inventing could be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, our product is water and power and air and all of the things.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, I'm going to take a quick break with Toby here. You're listening to ProCode 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Toby Kraus, co-founder and CEO of Lightship. I want to thank our great sponsors, Kinsley Meetings, and Kinsley has been ProCode 360's longest running sponsor. They're growing a great business, planning meetings, conducting meetings with lots of moving variables, so contact them. Also, Via Technologies, thanks to them for hosting ProCode 360 and all the great help their team gives me around managing the site. Colorado Biz Magazine, our partnership is one of building our audiences together. And newest is Denver Angels. We're partnering to feature great Colorado companies. Go to ProCode360.com and check out these great partners. I want to talk some more about your background, Toby. Morgan Stanley. So for a couple of years, you were involved in banking. And how did that influence how you raised money, how you managed to get $60 million before you had a prototype?
Whew, yeah. I'd say the connection to me being able to raise money is a little bit indirect, but, you know, certainly, you know, that was my first job out of college. I, you know, frankly, I would say I went into it a bit for all of the wrong reasons. Like I was a pretty like type A, like wanted to get good grades and go to, you know, prestigious university. And, at the time, you know, getting a job in an investment bank or management consulting was kind of like the cool thing to do. And I didn't really turn my brain on and sort of just fell into it. And after a couple of years, I realized like I didn't love it. That, you know, there were some good people and there's definitely like, I think I learned quite a lot.
Yeah.
But if I had do it all over again, I don't know that I would have started my career in banking. Now, that being said, like I did, it was quite helpful.
Like what's something you learned at Morgan Stanley that you used to get money?
Yeah. So a few things. One is like, I actually think that like there is an absolute need for, you know, investment banking as like an industry or a profession, because like you have to accumulate capital somehow to do great things. Like you mentioned, we raised a little over $60 million and like, we wouldn't be able to do anything that we've sort of achieved without having really good investors. I think, you know, that being said, I think what I took from Morgan Stanley sort of like specifically, I would say is just like a really good foundation of like business and finance fundamentals. Like that is always carried with me.
So it sounds like when you're pitching for funding, you know what kind of content to deliver. At least you know how to get the content you need to deliver.
Yeah, I think I have this appreciation. Well, one of just sort of being like a sort of like structured finance sort of like thinker. But I think I just have an appreciation for like, you know, how you're going to get an investor to invest. And I'm, you know, personally really stoked to be working on a company that's sustainable, but here's the deal. Like, the reason investors invest in us is because they think, there is a good, financial return.
Yeah.
In addition to like, we're doing something that's good for the world. And I think it's just important to know that. And it actually like, it's pretty empowering. Like this is why Tesla was successful. And I think this is why we can be successful is like the financial return is the engine, right?
I get the financial engine piece. And I actually did some math. And here's the math I did. Now, you're not going to concur exactly, but here's the math I did.
Okay.
Let's say at an average price tag of $150,000 and 15% net profit. I don't know what your net profit is. I'm not going to ask you. You'd have to sell over 2,500 units just to cover the initial investment from your investors. Now, that's just to cover it. Now, assuming they want a 10 or 20X return for like a massive hit, you'd have to sell 50,000 units for them to get the money they want. I mean, how do you, like, that's a lot. How do you put your head around that kind of market?
Well, so I think the way that a venture investor would think about this opportunity, or frankly, a lot of opportunities, like they're going to start and they're going to look at like, what is the total addressable market here? So, you know, those are some big numbers you mentioned, but, the addressable market for RVs in the United States, just RVs. And like, I think, you know, we can talk a little bit more about the long arc here, but, I think there's actually more to do than just RVs, but, just RVs it's like $30 billion in the United States. Right. And, It's crazy, but only a couple of companies actually really control that. How an investor or venture investor is going to look at it is they're going to say like, okay, is this a really big? Well, they're going to ask a bunch of questions. Is this a really big market? Yes. Have we built a really good team here? Does they have product market? Like, you know, they have their kind of checklist. But in terms of like that, how they're going to think about the outcome, they're going to say, all right, what's the market? You know, how do I think about like, you know, in a success scenario or a medium scenario or a downside scenario, how does Lightship kind of, you know, shake out there? And then they're going to like, you know, think about what is a reasonable, like multiple revenue or EBITDA or however you want to do it. And, you know, if you look at, you know, these days, a company that is a, you know, it's sort of a technology disruptor, like, I'm not going to give you a pitch that we're an AI company or whatever, you know, where the multiples are crazy, but like for like technology, it's sort of like hardware disruptors, even in a fairly depressed market, like right now, like those companies get valued at like 5x revenue or something. So I do think, you know, you need to have investors that are like comfortable with the risk of investing in hardware and comfortable thinking in the long run. But yeah, I think the path thus being a pretty valuable company is not absurd.
Well, you know, here's what I always wonder too, and I don't want to dwell on this topic too long. We'll miss the fun, some of the other fun stuff, but like every pitch that I've seen is like, my total market is, you know, $1,000 billion. And, you know, they come up with these huge numbers. If we just got 1% of this whole, it's such crap. Mm-hmm. So when you've got a product that doesn't even have a prototype built yet, what are you saying that gets $60 million with not even a working product?
I'd say it's not obvious that you'd want to create a venture backed, RV company or maybe hardware company of any kind. Like,
yeah.
I think the venture model was invented largely around software companies that had extremely high margins.
Yeah.
And you know, ARR and like, I mean, terms that like don't even talk about in hardware companies.
Yeah. Well, you can scale with massive margins in software.
Yeah. But I think the reality is like the way that companies get valued, like to your comment, I think is maybe a deeper like financial valuation question here. But like, if you looked at like any company and their net income and the amount of time it would take to like justify their market cap, it's going to be a long time for any company.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we're not unique in that way.
Yeah.
But we are building something that's hard and takes a little more time.
Yeah. Well, I don't get me wrong, because I think it's so fun to see the kind of innovation that, you know, Musk did and that you guys are doing here at Lightship. I mean, creating something brand new from scratch, and maybe that's too the massive upside that an investor sees is like, yeah, nothing new has been done in generations.
Yeah. And I think the other point maybe to make there too is like because hardware is hard and I'm, you know, not the first person to say that, like it's, you know, the way an investor is going to look at it is they're going to be like, look, like it's going to be hard, but on the other side of that hardship, like there is a lot of like, you know, pie to go out and get.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't want to say software is easy, but like there it's like, you know, they're not going to put 60.
It's not a big barrier to entry either.
Yeah. They're not going to put, to your original question, like $60 million into a pre-revenue software company. No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for us, I think like you have to understand like sort of the hardware model.
Yeah. I think it's super cool. And I want to ask you a couple more questions about creating this super hard piece of hardware. Like when you think about, I mean, you conceptualized it before you started building and engineering. I mean, what has been like the hardest part about bringing your vision to life that like non-engineers would find interesting?
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's been so many things that have been hard along the way. So you know what I would say, like, or at least what's top of mind for me right now is, you know, going back to we designed a product from the ground up. And actually, I should say, before we even designed the product, we actually spent a lot of time getting to know RVers and like understanding just like what people wanted, like what were the challenges, like what folks needed, and then we designed a product. And that was sort of like what led us to our sort of approach. But ultimately, we said, okay, we're going to design a product from the ground up. And what that means is like it, in addition to being an electric vehicle, it's going to be a like completely new architecture. And so like, if you think about what might be, you know, considered, some of the really tough stuff, like building out a full, like EV powertrain. And like, that sounds really complicated, and it is, but fortunately, like we have some really good people who've done that before.
Yeah,
and actually
yeah.
That's, you know, that's not my answer. What is actually pretty hard is like, you know, building an entire like new, like, you know, vehicle chassis and body and interior. And that's the type of stuff where, you know, automotive company is going to have hundreds or maybe thousands of people to like, mm-hmm. to do something like that. And we're going to do it with, you know, we have, you know, around 75 people. I'd say it's like developing something complex and new and inside of the resource constraints.
Yeah.
Of a startup.
Yeah.
$60 million. And, you know, we're grateful for every dollar we've raised, but like, That's like your average automotive company is going to spend $500 million to $1 billion on a development program. So
wow.
It's tight.
So, you know, is this a typical story of, you know, a startup, scrappy startup could do a lot more with a lot less than a big established, you know, automotive company, for example?
Yeah, I think it's, there's definitely some truth like to that, in that I think as a startup, we're able to move really quickly and we don't have any of the sort of like bias or distraction that other companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say though, also like, you know, another thing we have going is, if you look at the RV industry as it exists today, like they're capable of making some pretty good products, but they've never sort of like innovated in a powertrain. They haven't really innovated on like the fundamental vehicle architecture. So if you just look at how they're composed, they don't have, you know, deep product design and engineering.
And they got cool new cabinets and new fabrics and, you know, things that make them look modern and pretty. But yeah, it's not technology though.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe even going back a little bit to your you know, questions on how an investor would think about, you know, valuing this company. Like when you're a very established public company that isn't, you know, that isn't growing quickly and isn't necessarily, you know, focused on technology, at least across their portfolio, like, you know, you might be valued at 1x or, you know, 0.5 times revenue. Sure. You're not going to get, you know, $50, $60 million put into a program to go do something new.
Yeah. So last question, because I'm just intrigued by the challenge of building something like this.
Mm-hmm.
What was something that you didn't expect was going to be just bafflingly difficult? And it turned out to be like, oh my God, can't we get this figured out?
there's a bunch of things to be said there. I could spend a lot of time talking about just like building a team the right way and sort of like hiring for like sort of like values fit and how hard that is. But I think maybe a more salient, like punchy one is like, it's really hard to build a large composite structure. Like you wouldn't look at it and be like, oh yeah, like building a body like of this size, like it can be, you know, boats do it. And like my last job, Proterra, they did it. Like I wouldn't have thought that was going to be annoyingly hard, but it's pretty darn hard. I mean, like you look at, I would say like one thing I've learned is like, you know, composite construction is, it's sort of equal parts art and science.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a problem. You can just like plow a bunch of good engineers into a solution. You really need to like get like sort of better depths of understanding of like the industry and the supply chain and everything that goes into it.
You know, it seems that from a selling standpoint, like you're going to have so much buzz that you're not going to be able to fulfill demand initially. Like, you know, a lot of companies, when they get up and running, their biggest challenge is sales and marketing. It doesn't seem like you're going to have that challenge at all. Am I barking up the right tree on that?
I mean, I never want to take sales for granted, but I do think, you know, one of the silver linings of developing a product with a longer development cycle is you have a little bit more time. So, you know, we were fortunate enough to, you know, we launched the concept now a little over a year ago and got people sort of eyes on that and let people start putting pre-orders. And we really wanted to do that, when it was still in sort of the concept phase where, you know, the clay wasn't dry. We could change things. At that point, like I mentioned, we'd spend a bunch of time talking to people and learning, but until they really see it, like it's a little different.
Yeah. But I mean, you've had it out like South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Place. Like, I mean, you must have people just clamoring to get in and like, oh my God, I want one of these things.
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool to take it to a show and get like people's reactions. And then, you know, from that moment at South by Southwest, we have gotten to build up a pretty sizable backlog. And so, I definitely feel confident that this is a product that people really want, but the devil's totally in the details, right? Like we really need to deliver, the product that we want to deliver. And it needs to, you know, going back to the sort of like durability, reliability, like people need to love it. Like, and I think it's more important for us that people love it, than we, you know, get overly focused on getting a ton of them on the road or something like that.
Yeah. That makes me think about this, because it's like, it's one thing for people to gawk and ooh and ah when they see it, but when they go up and they talk to the owner and that owner says, oh my God, this thing is amazing.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, what could happen if something doesn't work right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I can see the tension that would have to exist, you know, as you guys build these.
Yeah. This is something that looks cool on a website, but, pretty different to see in person, and it's different still to go out and camp in it and bring your family along the ride. So I absolutely agree. I think our customers will need to be our biggest advocates.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's how I think this product will be successful.
Yeah. Now you're based in Colorado. We're sitting here in your big, beautiful manufacturing center that you've opened up. Why'd you pick here? I mean, you're from Colorado.
Right. We have about half the team's in Colorado, and then the other half of the team is in San Francisco. And, you know, in the early days, we'd sort of planned it out that way because, as it turns out, the Bay Area is a pretty good place to find a lot of like electric vehicle talent based on just, you know, kind of the evolution of the EV industry. And Colorado is a pretty awesome place to find all other sorts of talent. And it's also not sort of like California real estate and prices and things like that. So, you know, ultimately I'd say like we picked Colorado because we love, you know, we love Colorado as a, you know, sort of a place to live. It's got like really strong presence in the outdoor industry. It's actually got a little bit of sort of like RV, you know, focus, interestingly, particularly post pandemic. And, you know, for this is where we are in our sort of like, you know, pilot manufacturing facility. And I got to be honest, like, I think if we were at a point where we needed to like find the absolute like lowest like labor cost region or something, like, I don't know that Colorado would have been the place, but we're more focused on another of our values is stay balanced and like building a sustainable company where people like really want to be. And so this is a great place to get good folks and also have, you know, pretty good climate for building a big manufacturing company. Yeah.
You know, it's, I'm looking around and there's a bag here that was demonstrated to me where you've got like sliders up along the ceiling and so you can hang bags. And here's a bag with mountain climbing gear in it, mm-hmm. or rock climbing gear. And it's like sitting in this lightship and looking at this lightship, like there's a bit of a dissonance between what we think of as, you know, the outdoors. And so, you know, where you were talking about backpacking, right? Mm-hmm. So it seems like this is going to help people move from like, I don't want to sleep on the ground anymore personally.
Yeah.
And I'm getting kind of tired of climbing into a tent on my roof. So, you know, it does seem like a way to connect people who want to be outdoors to a different kind of a more comfortable, energy efficient way to do that. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Well, who is your, you describe your customer?
We have a bunch of different customers, customer types. I do think, you know, our kind of like number one kind of customer persona that we talk about, we call them the family adventurer. Mm. And I you know, I think you're onto something. Like we're talking about people who are, you know, love the outdoors and are, you know, maybe a couple or a family, or maybe they have a dog and are interested in like, you know, exploring like state national parks and maybe even some like less conventional stuff. Like they'd stay at a winery or, as opposed to like, you know, necessarily like, always staying in RV parks, though I think we'll have some of that too. So yeah, I think this is, and we haven't even talked about sort of like the sort of like off-grid capabilities. You could live in this thing for a week and not have any hookups. Yeah. So I would say it is like, this is designed for people who like love nature, want to be connected to it, want to do it in a sustainable way. And you didn't ask this question, but I think it, you know, based on some of the, sort of like reference points, like, I wouldn't call this like a hardcore, like overlanding rig, right? Yeah. Like, there's some really cool products out there, you know, truck bed campers or vans. And, this thing can certainly hold its own, but, you know, generally speaking, like, I think like the segment that we're going after, or, you know, Airstream, I would consider to be in this segment as well. Like, this is like a nice camper, you know, that like, for people who, you know, are not going to be like crazy hardcore about it.
Yeah. And it's okay because you need to know that must be a bit of an adjustment for you, a guy who's used to backpacking. And I mean, it's a different, there are different customer segments who want different kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think that's totally right. And, you know, I also think like, I think about myself and like, yeah, when I was 17 through my mid 20s, like, I wanted nothing more than to go, you know, backpacking. I'd have a, you know, a topo map and not a compass and nothing else. Right. And that's awesome. Like more power to people like younger me, but yeah, I think like once you, as I kind of said for myself, like once you have a family, you're a little bit like, you know, you want to have a little bit more comfort and protection from the elements and amenities. Like I think, something like this is pretty great.
Yeah, I would think so too. And, you know, I may be one of your early customers. So.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's a good note to end on, unless there's anything else. Like, when are we going to see you out there camping in this?
Well, we, so I mentioned we're working on our beta vehicles. Those are largely intended to be test assets. I haven't gotten this necessarily approved by our head of operations, but but we might have one of them disappear for a weekend so that Ben's the other founder.
Yeah.
We do every year we do a co-founder retreat in an RV where we go camping and talk about the business. And I think there's certainly a chance that will be one of our first journeys in one of these vehicles.
Oh, and I heard soon after that there's a podcaster model coming out.
Oh yes, yeah, absolutely. We'll put a little insulated booth for you.
Excellent. Hey, let's wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCode 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Toby Kraus, co-founder and CEO of Lightship. Toby, what a fun, and you know what? I do want one with a podcast booth right in it. Yeah. But knowing you, you know what? I'm looking at the bathroom. I'm guessing you just put foam around in the bathroom, close the door, and that'd be it.
I think you could do it.
I probably could. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCode 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCode 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.